Welcome to the Washington Report podcast. Today is Friday, January 3rd, 2024, and this is Sarah Karakamp. Several counties across Central Virginia are preparing to cast their ballots in a special election for a recently vacated seat in Virginia's Senate. The 32nd district, which encompasses eastern Loudoun south of Route 7, and it's currently held by Democrat Suhas Subramaniam, and he was elected on November 5th to the House of Representatives to Virginia's 10th congressional district. Today, we are having Tumay Harding, who is running for Virginia State Senate from 32nd district. She is Turkish American. Her family roots goes back to Uzbekistan, Afghanistan, and Turkey. She is a former teacher for Loudoun County Public Schools and Prince William County Public Schools, former controller for VentureX and Ashburn Business that provided office spaces to other companies. And she is a George Mason University graduate. And her fight started in schools as a mother and parent and teacher. Tumay, welcome to the Washington Report podcast.
Thank you so much for having me here. It's an honor to be here.
Can you briefly explain Virginia State Senate elections, how many special elections and how many seats are vacant currently?
Sure. Right now, my district is the 32nd district, and that includes Aldi, Dulles, that's the Chantilly area, Sterling, Ashburn, Brambleton, South Riding. And I think that's, I covered all of them there. And what has occurred right now is, to your point, Suhas Subramaniam won the congressional seat. So now the seat has been vacated. Now this gives us the opportunity to create, once I am elected, 20 seats on the Republican side and 20 seats on the Democrat side, which actually gives us the majority because our lieutenant governor would be our tie-breaking vote. So what that means for a lot of Virginians is that by getting me in the seat, we could have a more pro-family, pro-small business majority that will help enrich all Virginians.
So currently two seats are vacant. There are two vacant seats in Virginia State
Senate. Right, right. And the other is, I believe, in the Powhatan area, and that's with Cyphers.
The election for that is tomorrow.
Their election is also, yes, coming up the same day, I believe, as ours.
Tumay, you stated that you'll be a strong voice, as you have been until now, actually, for school choice. Can you elaborate on how you plan to expand educational opportunities for families?
Yes, of course. I think that there's always goodness when each family is different. Each student is different, and each student's needs are different. So I think by providing school choice, we give the opportunity to the child and the student to grow to their potential, to grow to what we were all put on this earth for certain specific reasons. And that way, the students and the parents can have a choice of where they can send their child. Now, for some students, that could mean public schools, because we do have great public schools and we most definitely have great public school teachers. For some students, that could mean public charter schools. For some, it could mean private schools. And for some, it could mean homeschooling. So I think you see with the examples that I just gave you, how important it is that we do have school choice. I also think that it creates a healthy competition between the schools, and we all need that in life. We all need a little bit of competition to strive for more.
And is your region lacking of charter schools? What is the current situation?
Very, very good question. So in all of Virginia, we have 8 charter schools. In Middleburg, we have 2. One of those is Middleburg Community Charter School, which I am on the board of, and it's an amazing school, elementary school, where STEM and science is just exploding. The kids are having so much fun learning, and I think we deserve to have more choices like that.
How about your plans for underprivileged areas? I know Loudoun County and your area is a wealthy area, but what are your plans for these areas?
I think government was made for exactly that. We all go through hard times, and that's what government is for, to just lift us up, give us that extra push when we need it to regain ourselves, whether it's because we lost a job or a loved one, and we need a little more stability during that time. And that's what I believe government is for. So I'm all for supporting our communities when they are in need.
You also mentioned advancing merit-based education and admission standards. What specific policies do you believe should be implemented to ensure that students are evaluated based on their abilities and achievements rather than race or other factors?
I think just what you said right now, you know, I think creating equality is very important, and the divisiveness, well, we know where that takes us. Let's do merit-based education where you study hard, you work hard, sometimes you fail, and then you know you have to work a little harder at it. And that's what will set our children up for success once they leave school. Once they're in the workplace, no one's going to give you a bonus for not meeting your quota, right? I wish it were so, but...
But many advocates for merit-based education argue that it ensures fairness and rewards individual achievement, as you said, you just said. However, some critics suggest that this approach can inadvertently overlook the historical and generational disadvantages faced by families, particularly those with ancestral ties to slavery, and can disproportionately affect communities of color. How do you reconcile the need for merit-based systems with the reality that these families have experienced trauma and systemic barriers for generations?
Well, first of all, my daughters come from a mixed home. My husband is, Caucasian. He comes from British descent. My family is Asian. So by telling my child that because they, you know, they are a minority or anything like that, or just by looking at them and saying, hey, guess what? You can't do this, sets them up for failure, in my opinion. What I do believe in is creating supports for everybody. You know, I am also a first-generation American. My parents left Turkey on a visa lottery, and they wanted to help us achieve the American dream. So here we are. And did I have a hard time figuring out how to get into college? Yes. Did my parents help me? They tried the best they could, but they didn't have that experience. So I do want to make those types of supports available to people in need. I want it to be easily accessible. And I think that is part of building a good school also, making those supports available for all our students and all our families. And that's where also another priority of mine comes in. Parents deserve a place in the classroom.
Go ahead, please.
No, that's all. That's good. All.
Isn't this approach missing the U.S. history of slavery? I mean, newcomers are okay. Yeah, they had to try really hard. But don't you think some communities need help still today? Not in your district, maybe, but just because of the past, they need help. Don't you think?
The past what?
Don't you
because
think
of their slavery ancestors?
Yes.
Well, I can only speak for myself in this situation. My parents' families were attacked by communists. My uncles were imprisoned for no reason. One was shot, and my parents had to flee their homes with the shirts on their backs to come here. Do I sit here and say, oh, but you know what? My family was given a hard time. Their businesses were stolen from them. My family was attacked with weapons, so I deserve an easier route. Do
but
I say that?
That didn't happen in the United States.
Excuse me?
That didn't happen in the United States.
What does it matter where it happened? This is what I'm talking about. In the end, our children are going to go out into this world, and we want them to be equipped with the best possibilities, the best chances for success. And by telling a child, hey, guess what? Because of the color of your skin or because you're a woman, you can't do this. What are we really telling them? That they need more help because they're a woman or because they of their skin color? No, I don't believe in that.
No, just
I believe in telling a child or any human being that I believe in them and they can do it. And that's what makes this country so beautiful, is that if you want to do it and you want to get it done, you can do it. The only person between you and your dreams is yourself.
You also expressed concerns about politics in schools. What steps will you take to ensure that public school instruction remains focused on academic excellence rather than political ideologies or divisive concepts?
As I mentioned before, we have amazing public school teachers, and to create this atmosphere of politics within the schools is a mistake. The teachers are there for reading, writing, and arithmetic, and that's what they studied, and that's what they have their certifications in. To label them or give them the jobs of doctors and therapists is not okay. We shouldn't burden them with that large responsibility. That's where the families come in, and they're the parents. They're the parents, and it's their children. In the end, if they ask for the help of the school, of course, I'm sure that the schools would welcome them with open arms. But the children are the parents' children, not the government's children, and politics should stay out of the classroom.
But history has to be taught as well, correct?
Of course.
Great. President Donald Trump has promised to dismantle the Department of Education in the past. It was a goal that echoes a similar vow made by President Ronald Reagan in 1980. Given the central role the Department of Education plays in shaping national educational policies, do you support the idea of dismantling it? And what do you believe would be the long-term impact of eliminating such an agency on local education systems? And how would you address the potential challenges it could create for ensuring especially equal access to quality education for all Americans?
That was a big loaded question. I'll try to answer it in the best way that I can. First, that's on the federal purview, and that would not be within my job. But I'll say this, dismantling the I don't know that he's completely going to do that. I guess that's a good question to ask me when and if that truly does happen. And
what is your approach? How do you view this, whether he is planning or not in general? Because this is the discussions of today.
I think that through the Department of Education thing, the politics have riddled into the classroom. And I think that that is a main objective of mine, to get rid of it. I think that we need to raise children not according to the government and what we and how we want to control them. So if there are agendas in there like that, which I do believe are, I do think that they're not good for our schools.
So you support local branches rather than a federal central education agency?
I would say that's a fair assumption, but like I said, it's a bigger discussion and it's a deeper discussion, but on the surface level, I would say yes to that.
How about its functions to provide access to everybody? Can the local institutions handle this as well, do you think?
I think that if we build the proper infrastructure for it, yes. I think that if we allow the voucher system to come into place where we have more school choice, then yes, I do.
And we know that you started standing against some books with sexual content in school book clubs. What is your thought having those books in school libraries? Like, do you think books on sex, sexuality fall under this category, or where we should draw the line?
I don't think they have a place in our public schools. If they have a place in the public libraries, I don't, you know, that's, I can see that happening if those public libraries choose to do it. I'm not saying I'm an advocate for it, but 100% they do not belong in our schools. We have so many better books out there. We have Jane Austen, we have Shakespeare, we have so many amazing authors that we can study, so many amazing books that we can study. Why we're talking with our children about sexuality is beyond me, and those don't belong in the school. I think those conversations belong outside of the school.
How about comprehensive sex education? Because this is the reason provided all the time by liberals, and they believe that the education throughout school years is important within the context of age, of course, but do you think any books on sex, sexuality, pregnancy, birth fall under this category?
You're asking me, but it's a very broad question you're asking me. So are you asking me about like anatomical books, or are you talking about pornographic books?
The first one.
Oh,
The first one.
anatomical books.
Sexuality, pregnancy, birth, informatic content.
So initially you asked me about sex education. Sex education is a choice that parents have to either put their children in the class or not. And again, I take it back to parental choice. So right as of now, we do have a choice for that. So if a parent decides that that's what they want, then that's what they want. If they decide, no, my child doesn't need that, that's a conversation I'd like to have with my child at home, then they have that right too.
When it comes to pornographic books, you support banning them from school libraries.
I wouldn't use the word banning. I would use the word they don't belong in the schools. It's a waste of our taxpayers' money, and it's also not allowing parents into the classroom. That's a conversation that needs to be had at home.
You also pointed out that parents have been left in the dark in some districts like Loudoun County. What was the issue, and how do you propose to increase transparency and accountability in local school boards and school systems to ensure that parents are always informed?
As you know, we went through a Title IX incident, my own family did, where my daughter came forward because she was being sexually harassed by her teacher. And turns out there was another girl that was being also sexually harassed, and then another that was sexually assaulted by this man. And so we fought for a Title IX case. They didn't want to open it for us. They said, no, we're going to sweep it under the rug, and none of this ever happened. Meanwhile, it wasn't just one person, he said, she said. It was three girls saying, this happened to us. Later on, we found out that a year and a half before my daughter came forward and her friends came forward, this man had sexually assaulted another girl, but he was led back into the classroom. So this is what I'm talking about, because it took us 17 months to get this man fired when he should have been fired within 3 months. And that was a lot of work. We had to hire a lawyer. I spent at least 40 hours a week looking through policies and books and detailed information to fight for the girls. And I was able to do it, but it really opened my eyes to how difficult the administration, Loudoun County Public Schools Administration, I'm talking superintendents and lawyers that we pay with our tax dollars, how difficult they make it for parents to defend their children. And it's always administration first and students and teachers last. So we noticed this trend of them supporting the person that did the wrong and also just pushing the victims down. So
Why do you
that's
think so? Why they are defensive on this kind of issues?
Why? Because they don't want to deal with it. They want to keep doing the things that they're doing. They want to keep politics in the classroom. They want to keep that divide within the parent with the parents and the students. And so by using their wealth, that the $400,000 a year that we spend on our superintendent as well as multiple lawyers with our tax money, they're the ones that, keep us quiet. It's not about the parents and students, and that's just the way it is. It's corruption.
Another matter is a 24-hour overdose notification bill. Can you tell us why is it important? This is also about transparency, and it's about informing parents, not leaving them in the dark.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a really good question and topic you bring up. My opponent, while he was in the House of Representatives, voted against the 24-hour notice bill that would notify parents of opioid overdoses in their schools within 24 hours. And he voted it down, saying parents did not have a right or reason to know about these overdoses. We all know that these conversations need to be had at home so that a mother or father can sit down with their child and say, daughter, let's sit down. I heard that there are overdoses in your school. What do you think about this? What can we do so that this doesn't happen to you? And have these basic conversations. And also for the child to feel safe at school. For them to carry that burden on their own, it's just not right. So he voted against this. I'm all about transparency, allowing parents to know, our governor did end up signing an executive order, and now within 24 hours, we do notify our parents and schools of these types of incidents. And guess what? They've gone down. The number of incidents have gone down because the community is aware of it and the students are aware of it.
Your rival, he said that he believes in notification, but he said that the bill, the design it was created, was violating the privacy of the student. What do you say against this excuse?
Nobody's asking for students' names. And also, let me say this, if it were a gun in the school, I would also say, hey, it needs to be reported. He'll say that about guns, but he won't say it about drug overdoses because it's a problem he wants to hide.
Understand. You also oppose the LCPS policy allowing transgender students to use the bathroom and locker rooms of their choice. And why it's something that you don't want?
I think we need to protect our daughters and protect their spaces. You know, Title IX came about in the United States of America in the 1970s, defending a girl's right to be on a school sport, to be on a college sport, defending her right for private spaces in the workplace as well as at school for safety. And we're taking away that right by allowing boys and girls to share the same spaces. Right now, the culture...
So it's not specifically transgender students?
No, it's how do you identify today? So if a boy were to say he identifies as a girl, he can walk into that bathroom or locker room.
All right. Another one, which is important, but also we can discuss a little bit before we finish. You stated that you lead the fight to repeal both the car tax and grocery taxes. While many support lower taxes, critics argue that tax cuts can lead to reductions in essential public services like education, healthcare, and infrastructure somewhere. How do you plan to balance your commitment to this?
Right now, Virginia has the tax surplus. We have the means. And also, let's stop spending money on the things that we don't need. How about we start there? Like the frivolous agendas, like creating bathrooms that cost billions of dollars that don't need fixing, so that they're shared with boys and girls. So I think we need to have a better idea of what sensible spending is. Also, we do have a surplus right now. That is, especially if we start lower with our lower income families, you know, going back to your question earlier about our friends that are going through harder times than most, I think we can start there. And that's our governor's proposal, is to start with our friends that are in the lower income brackets first and then work our way through. You know, having purchased a new car this year, and we don't purchase new cars. It's been 12 years since we bought a new car. The tax was enormous for us. And it'll continue. Every 6 months, we will be taxed.
Very briefly, your stance on women's sports has been clear as well. You oppose allowing men to compete in women's sports for transgenders as well. How do you see this issue evolving in Virginia? And are you planning to work on any specific legislation?
I think that right now, I'm not sure how it's evolving, to be honest with you, to answer that question. You know, we had a Loudoun County student graduate and go over to Arizona and play as a trans woman, so from man to woman, on a women's volleyball team. So it is happening still, and it has come from our area too, Loudoun County. So for those people that say it doesn't even happen, well, there's your first argument right there. And then secondly, I don't think it's fair for our daughters. You know, we were uniquely designed, our bodies, and a man's body is more muscular, it's more strong, and it's more resilient. And so therefore in sports, it's not fair. And we're taking away scholarships from our daughters, and we're taking away chances at Olympic medals.
Okay, next one. Do not call it loaded question, please. Virginia allows abortions in the first 27 weeks of pregnancy, and your rival, Sirinivasan, wants to codify abortion rights in the Virginia Constitution. Did you support the government Youngkin's effort to ban abortions in Virginia after 15 weeks? Currently, it's 27 weeks. What is your stance on this?
First, my stance on it is that I value all human life. And I believe that my constituents in the 32nd District also value all human life. And I am a representative for the people. I think that currently also what our governor is also saying is that if a woman's life is at stake and if her mental state is at stake, that there are options. So I think it's a fair way to come about it.
And Srinivasan,
15 weeks, also a woman who is suffering from mental illness or her life is at stake. I think that's important to mention. And also, I think that it's important to mention and encourage your viewers to look up videos on how abortions are different after 15 weeks.
Srinivasan now serves on the Loudoun Free Clinic Board as a member of the House of Delegates, and he also sponsored legislation allowing physicians licensed in foreign countries to receive provisional licenses in the U.S. And if they agree to work in underserved areas of Virginia for at least 2 years. What is your opinion on this?
So that's actually not in the purview of the Senate. But I'll say this, I love competition. I think competition is important. I think that if somebody has a special skill, then yeah, let's bring them out here. And again, that goes back to why I don't also believe in DEI, because then we're not setting up our students for success. We're bringing other people from other countries over here because they have special talents. Let's prepare our students like that too.
Last question. Why should Virginians elect you with all the issues facing Virginia? Why do you believe you are the best candidate for the state senate, and what unique qualities and experiences do you bring to the table, you think?
I represent the people of 32nd District. I represent the people of Loudoun County, I can easily say too. I'm a mom. I was a small business owner and also an educator. I have my master's in education and curriculum development. I can speak for the people. I've visited the mosques, the temples, the Hindu temples, the Sikh temples, and people have invited me into their homes and served me dinner just to have conversations. And it's been amazing and beautiful. The thing that I'm hearing most is we want our parental rights back. We want reading, writing, and arithmetic and merit-based education back. And we want to protect our daughters. And I'm here to represent that. That's what everyone's talking about. They want to get rid of the drugs in the schools, and they want a more family-based and small business-based majority in the Senate.
Thank you so much, Tumay. Do you want to add anything else?
Thank you so much. Please go to my website, tumay4va.com. That's TumayForVA.com to find out more about voting. Please go out and vote because we're expecting a snowstorm. Please go out and vote today or tomorrow. We're also having a rally with the governor on Saturday at 1:30 at Freedom High School. It's going to be so much fun. Like I said, our Governor Youngkin will be there and other special guests. And go out to vote. Make your vote be heard. Don't waste your vote. And please vote for me. I hope I can earn your vote. And I do care, and I want to represent the people. I am not a career politician like my opponent is, and I'm here to represent the people and listen to you. So thank you so much for your time.
Thank you very much, Tumay Harding. You are running for the Virginia State Senate from 32nd District. Have a nice day.
Thank you so much.